All right, y'all, welcome to the Scott Horton Show. I am the director of the Libertarian Institute, editorial director of antiwar.com, author of the book Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, and I've recorded more than 5,000 interviews going back to 2003, all of which are available at scotthorton.org. You can also sign up for the podcast feed. The full archive is also available at youtube.com/scotthortonshow. All right, you guys on the line, I've got the great Jim Bovard, author of Public Policy Hooligan and Attention Deficit Democracy and a bunch of great books like that. And here he is writing at the American Conservative magazine, Duncan Lemp's parents threatened with jail for protesting his killing, the third in a series over there. Welcome back to the show. How you doing, Jim?
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having me back.
Really happy to have you on the show here. And people should know that the first one here at TAC is called Did Maryland Police Shoot and Kill a Sleeping Man? Followed by The Mystery Deepens Over the Pre-Dawn Police Killing of Duncan Lemp. And then now the latest here about his parents being threatened with jail for protesting the killing. But if you could, for people not familiar, can we go back to the night of, was it March 12th and the raid on this guy's house?
Yeah, it was the morning of March 12th at 4:30 a.m. And Duncan Lemp was living in with his family in a very affluent part of Montgomery County in Potomac, a quiet neighborhood. The Montgomery County police said they had got an anonymous tip 2 months earlier that he had a firearm. And he was, according to the police, he's prohibited from having firearms due to a juvenile conviction. The family's lawyers say that's not true, but the cops went and built a case up, I guess, over the next 2 months. My impression is that there was an informant who was key to the case. And the cops went to a judge on March 11th, got a no-knock search warrant, and then basically went and attacked the house the next morning. It started out, according to the family, by the police shooting into Lemp's bedroom window, and he was apparently fatally wounded in bed. And then the police threw flashbangs and then stormed into the house. They basically dragged folks around. They handcuffed the family members and his pregnant girlfriend who was in bed with him. And so they were all handcuffed and being harangued by the cops while he was bleeding to death.
Man, so I know it's too early to say for sure, but does it look like they just went there with the intent to murder him, or one of these cops was just, you know, goofing around with his finger on the trigger and premature ejaculated all over the place here, or what happened?
Well, you know, that's a good question, because there are some folks who think that the police intended to kill him all along. And if you start out a search by firing into the bedroom window, as the family says it started, that does seem more like an execution than a search. But, you know, I don't know what the intent was, but Montgomery County did turn a search warrant into a death warrant. And, you know, there are some folks who said, well, it was just a single SWAT, team member who was jumpy or shouldn't have fired, whatever. If that was true, then why is the county basically covering it up completely? And the county's put out three different versions of why Lemp was killed. And the third one really was almost comically in bad grammar as far as twisting and turning sentences. And you can read it three times and you don't, and it doesn't mention that, oh, by the way, we shot this dude and he died. It was more like, well, he was there and there was a rifle in the bedroom and then there was a shotgun shell in the door. It's like, you know, okay, so when did you kill him? You know, this is somewhat germane. I mean, the cops made a big deal out of putting online photos of five guns that they seized at Lemp's house, but they haven't put out any photos of his bullet-ridden corpse, which I think people might be interested in.
Yeah, well, and you would think that if there was a gun near the outstretched right hand of his bullet-ridden corpse, they'd have showed us that.
Yeah, I mean, the cops have said there was a rifle. They've kind of implied, you know, again, it's very strange wording how they did it in their third version of the fatal raid. But you would think that they, you know, you would think that that Lemp was on the property line waiting to start shooting at them as soon as they pulled up in the driveway at 4:30 a.m. So, but no, I mean, apparently how this went down is the cops fired in the window. There were four different windows on Duncan Lemp's bedroom, and the cops may have known which one to shoot through. I don't know, or I don't know what kind of, you know, lighting they had, what kind of night vision material they might have had, night vision equipment. But the cops have said almost nothing for over a month, and their story doesn't pass the smell test. And they're, you know, Montgomery County Police say, well, they're so overwhelmed with the pandemic that they can't really respond to requests on this. Mm-hmm. You know, however, 3 days ago, the county police posted a video online. There were 30 police cars who did a parade by a local hospital to show that they were supporting the healthcare workers. Mm-hmm. Okay, if y'all got time for a parade, you got time to answer some questions about how you killed a county resident in an apparently completely unjustified raid at 4:30 a.m. I mean, okay, if the cops wanted to search this guy's house, knock on the door at 9 a.m., say, hey, here's our warrant, you know, open up. This is how it's done in civilized societies. This is how it was established in England, I think in 1603 or 1604, that the sheriff had to knock and announce and declare his intent and show a warrant. So we're going back 400 years, but here we are in Maryland, and 400 years we've gone the wrong direction.
Yeah, man. Hey guys, Scott Horton here from Mike Swanson's great book, The War State. It's about the rise of the military-industrial complex and the power elite after World War II, during the administrations of Harry Truman, Dwight Eisenhower, and Jack Kennedy. It's a very enlightening take on this definitive era on America's road to world empire. The War State by Mike Swanson. Find it in the right-hand margin at scotthorton.org. Hey, y'all, Mike Swanson is a successful Wall Street trader with an Austrian school understanding of the markets, and therefore he has great advice to share with you. Check out Mike's work and sign up for his list at wallstreetwindow.com. And that's what you'll get, a window into all of Mike's trades. He'll explain what he's buying and selling and expecting and why. I know you'll learn and earn a lot. WallStreetWindow.com. That's WallStreetWindow.com. So, now when it comes to this tip or informant, well, I guess they claim they had gotten an anonymous tip, but you're saying it sounds to you like they had an informant that turned the guy into them. Where do you get that from?
Several different insights on that. One of which is the there is a pattern in these kind of cases. Duncan Lemp was tied to a number of groups, I guess Boogaloo groups. He was helping them set up websites. He was helping folks. He was outspoken online on this. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you know, I've been a big supporter of gun rights for my entire adult life. But there have been a lot of cases in the past where people in some of these groups were actually, you know, basically double agents working for the government. There've been a number of libertarians who've been taken down on this stuff. There was a group back in 1996, I believe, out in Arizona that got, basically leveled by a government informant who encouraged them to do things that were not legal. And this is the same pattern you have with anti-war groups going back to the Vietnam War in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. You've seen this a lot with Muslims after 9/11. A lot of government informants would go into a mosque and basically encourage people to, let's do this, or let's make a pipe bomb, or let's do that. So, I don't have specifics, and it's possible I'm wrong on this, but it's striking to me that the SWAT team was so frightened of Duncan Lemp that they felt they had to go in shooting. If something like this happened in Baltimore, people would say, well, it was a Thursday. You know, this is very unusual in Montgomery County. It's and this is also very unusual for the Montgomery County Police. which does not have a record of doing these kind of SWAT killings in affluent neighborhoods.
Mm. Well, and you know, if they're so concerned about that this guy was a member of some patriot groups or this and that kind of thing, it goes to show their ignorance. You know, I mean, the reality is these guys, the Boogaloo or whatever, that's not going to happen until they really try to go around confiscating guns, you know, en masse, door to door with the National Guard or the Army or some kind of thing where that day never comes. But these guys aren't going to go out in a, this guy Limp, for example, wasn't going to go out in a hail of bullets and glory just because they came to his house with a warrant where he was assured that he would see a black robe judge and be arraigned and go through the regular process. You know what I mean? I could see them convincing themselves looking at his Facebook page if he was part of some, you know, had a Boogaloo meme up there, something that, oh no, it's Randy Weaver, we have to go, and you know, which they built up Randy Weaver that same way. This guy's special forces, so he's going to go all Rambo on us. But it was all in their own imagination. Same thing kind of deal, right?
Yeah, and as far as I know, Duncan Limp had no history of violence. He was not making threats. I mean, there are some of these Boogaloo types, some of these folks, you know, some of the things that they say online is like, whoa, you know, I'm... as someone who's dealt with a lot of federal agencies over the years and been very critical of them and been criticized by them, it's like there's a certain standard that you need to use if you're speaking in public or online. And a lot of folks don't seem to be aware of that.
But so, you're saying there's no indication that this guy was threatening to kill anybody or start a civil war, maybe just show up for one after it started.
No, but from what I've seen, he was helping gun rights groups set up secure platforms on the internet. Mm-hmm. Duncan Limp was a very savvy software guy, and he was doing pro bono work for some of the gun rights and hardline groups. Mm-hmm. That may have put him more in the crosshairs as far as concern, but that still wouldn't explain why the SWAT team felt like they had to go in at 4:30 a.m. in the morning and perhaps start out by shooting and then throwing in flashbangs. There's a search warrant that the police had sealed for 30 days. It should have been opened, I guess, a week or so, 10 days ago. But the courts are closed down here because of the pandemic. However, they have time for police parades, but not that. But the lawyers... The Limp family has two excellent lawyers, Rennie Sandler and Jonathan Felder. They are pushing to get those warrants and the affidavits publicly released, or at least released to the family and the lawyers. And it may be in the affidavits that we'll be able to see what the police were told, or at least we'll see what the police told the judge. I would think that the judge who signed off on a no-knock warrant at 4:30 a.m. in the morning for someone who did not have a history of violence, you know, people need to answer some questions on this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're not going to. The judge certainly isn't going to answer to anyone. But now, is it the law in Maryland that if, and I guess I think you already said that his lawyers dispute this, but if it were the case that he had a felony, not necessarily a violent one, but a felony as a juvenile, that he would be banned from owning a gun as an adult? Is that how it works? Do you know?
What the police have said, if I recall exactly, was that he had a juvenile offense which prohibited him from owning firearms until the age of 30. So now the cops have said this. The cops have been vague, which, I mean, the cops have very little credibility on this case at this point. But the family says, and the family lawyers say, that's not the case. There are a number of he said, she said things here that I think some of them are going to be resolved as more facts come out. But, you know, there really needs to be an independent investigation. And I would love to see the emails and the other stuff prior to the SWAT team raid. Mm-hmm. What was their intent? Were they, you know, were they intending to open up shooting? And if so, you know, what gave them the right to kill the guy before he had a chance to raise his arms and surrender? I mean, it's the same thing. It's the same, you know, controversy that happened with the killing of Vicki Weaver. She's standing there in the cabin door, FBI sniper 200 yards away, blows her head off. And then afterwards, oh, I guess we should have asked them to surrender first. Yeah, that's that would certainly make you look better. So,
Well, and you said that the information, they say a tip, whatever information it was that came in, was a couple of months before. So do we know whether they had, it doesn't sound like they had cased the place, that they, for example, they either didn't know that he was, you know, shared a bed at night with a pregnant woman, or they did know that and didn't care and went ahead and attacked the house like that anyway? Seems like probably they didn't even know. And it's not like the guy was holed up in there. He probably left the house just like with any of these. Like, why didn't they just wait for him to go to 7-Eleven and arrest him then?
Sure. I mean, it's there's a parallel there with the David Koresh case. I mean, you had the ATF going in there with more than 70 agents for their Operation Showtime, as they called it. And, you know, they launched an unprovoked attack on the Branch Davidians' home and then later told the press that they'd been ambushed. What they didn't tell the press is that David Koresh and undercover ATF agents had gone out target shooting 8 or 10 days before the ATF raid. They had an easy chance to arrest David Koresh. They chose not to do it. Instead, they brought in the television crews and they had their big triumph, but it didn't turn out so well. But same for here. I mean, it wasn't like Duncan Lemp was, you know, locked in his basement and not willing to come out. I mean, cops could have pulled him over, asked him, you know, and I think he probably would have complied. I mean, he might have been very unhappy. But, you know, they had no reason to kill the guy. And this is what the whole case is about. They went and killed the guy. They never gave him a warning, apparently. They opened fire. And, you know, this was not someone that the police should have killed.
All right. Now, so talk to me a little bit about, and I guess this goes to the idea that maybe they were trolling his social media pages and this and that, because apparently they were doing the same to his family. And saw that his family was planning a protest and tried to warn them that they better not. Is that right?
Yeah, it was not his family planning the protest. It was some folks, some activists who were planning the protest at Montgomery County Police Headquarters, and the family had signaled online that they would be going to the event. County lawyer, county prosecutor Haley Roberts sends a warning letter to the Lemp family lawyers saying, open source information indicates that your clients intend to participate in this planned protest over the killing of their son. Open source apparently means that the cops are tracking Lemp family members online. You know, they got lots of extra time on their hands. And the prosecutor warned the family that the Governor Hogan's stay-at-home order does not include planned protests, and warned them that if they went to the protest, that they could face $5,000 fine and a year in jail for violating Hogan's lockdown order.
Mm-hmm. And then, so they had the protest, and you went and took some shots. So what was it like?
Well, it was, you know, I was careful not to recommend that people go to this protest ahead of time. Partly because the at least one of the organizers was encouraging people to bring firearms to the event. Bringing guns to a protest in Maryland is not legal. So I didn't want to be encouraging people to go to a place where they would end up getting locked up. And Mike Hartz, one of the organizers, posted a note on the afternoon before the event saying it's illegal to demonstrate with arms in the state of Maryland. So I suggest if anybody is bringing arms, let's loophole this thing up and don't demonstrate. Just stand or walk around with your arms. I wouldn't carry any signs if I were you, but I definitely wouldn't mind taking a stroll with my rifle, that's for sure. And so you had folks show up. About 10% of the people who showed up for the demonstration got arrested for firearms violations. That was after things were breaking up, but these are folks that ended up in jail because of that.
This is a protest about cops murdering a guy quite lawlessly. And these guys think they found a loophole in the protest with a rifle law that just don't hold a sign and you'll get away with it and it'll be all right.
Yeah. My hunch is that organizer did not go to law school. Yeah. I mean, this was the kind of advice that was being given. And, you know, I've gone to lots of demonstrations and I've come close to getting arrested a number of times, not for carrying weapons, but for other things, pushing my luck. But I mean, to see this level of, basically reckless. I mean, you're basically encouraging people to come and dance, you know, basically do a let's pretend, hopefully, and it worked out badly for, you know, back in January, they had over 20,000 people show up for the gun rights protest in Richmond, mm-hmm. over 20,000. And so practically almost 1,000 times as many as showed up for the protest on Saturday in at the Montgomery County Police Headquarters. You didn't have anybody getting arrested in Richmond. And here in Montgomery, you get, you know, practically 10% of the attendees get arrested. So anyhow.
Yeah. Well, but so the good part of the rally, talk about that, because I think you said the arrest really came after the whole thing was breaking up anyway, right?
I mean, it was great to have a chance to meet some of Lemp's kinfolk. His aunt and uncle were there, Kathy and Matthew Lemp, both very solid folks. They've both been outspoken on the online about this case and the outrage. It was great to have a chance to meet Mercedes Lemp, his mother. I mean, she's had a horrendous loss. You've got government agents killing her firstborn son. And it was good to be able to talk with them and get a better sense of the overall how things went down. But, you know, as far as it's great that people are outraged by this case. It's great that people are protesting. I think a focused protest would have been, hopefully that'll happen down the road. But, you know, basically there was a lot of shouting and profanity. And there are some folks who think that that shouting the F word at police has magical power. It doesn't. But it was unfortunate because you had all three of those members of the Lemp family. All of them are telegenic. All of them are, you know, can explain the case very well. And, you know, they weren't, you know, encouraged to make statements. There wasn't a video from them explaining from their perspective what happened or raising questions. Instead, it was, you know, guys, you know, waving flags and shouting and, you know, marching around. And, you know, hopefully there'll be other protests down the road that are organized differently. So,
yeah. Well, you know, I think, you know, back to the first part of that about how good it is that people do care about this. I mean, you'd like to think that the cops kill anybody in this way, that they're not just going to be forgotten, that somebody's going to try to stick up for the truth and for accountability for this kind of thing. So that's good.
Absolutely.
But yeah, you're right. It seems like, you know, this kind of thing. Well, first of all, it's good that they didn't arrest the family or anybody just for the violating the social distancing thing like they had threatened, right?
Right. Now, it was interesting. There was a lot of animosity against the police there. And I was there as a journalist, not as a participant in the protest. So, mm-hmm. so I got there about 15 minutes early. And it's funny, shortly after I got there, the cop cars basically blocked the entrance roads on both sides to the police headquarters. But I'd already gotten in, so I just parked right next to the headquarters and was out walking around. And there were several policemen, kind of hanging out in front of the big old headquarters. And they said, "Hey, guys, is it okay if I park over there?" "Did you park by fire hydrant?" "No, I didn't do that." Well, I guess it's okay. You know, I had my press pass, I had my Nikon camera. So, and, you know, I wanted to see what happened, but I spoke to a number of police and they were, you know, civil. So, I would guess that there are some Montgomery County police who are very unhappy with how this went down as far as a SWAT raid. because this is not Baltimore. I mean, in Baltimore, the Baltimore police are notorious for lying, for robbing people, and for killing them. That's not been the reputation of the Montgomery County Police at this time.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's something that they could do about it. I mean,
oh, absolutely. And it's you know, people, well, you have to wait till the investigation is done. It's like, no. I mean, if you look at the statements that the police department has made so far, and also if you look at Maryland law gives a huge amount of procedural advantages to any policeman who kills a private citizen. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it's almost like a cover up is baked in from the time that a cop pulls the trigger. It's something called the Law Enforcement Officer's Bill of Rights. And it's like, yeah, well, it's basically means that the cops have a right to shoot people. So, and then they have 5 or 10 days before they have to make a statement, any statement. And often the cops get to see the evidence that's come in and, oh, okay. So this is the evidence. So this is what happened then. So, you know, I mean, it's something that, the ACLU has protested vigorously in this state. A number of civil rights groups, a number of black groups have protested this because certainly in Baltimore, the victims of police shootings tend to be black. So, and this is something that has gotten media attention. The Baltimore Sun has done some good criticisms of this, but it hasn't been enough to change the law. And so the law is still basically gives the law is totally slanted against the constitutional rights of anybody who gets shot by police.
Yeah. Well, and so to the other cops resenting it, they should push to have their paramilitary, you know, SWAT force disbanded. I mean, if this is their real problem is a crisis of confidence.
Yeah, great. Scott, that's a good idea. I'll send them an email.
Yeah, man. Those guys, I mean, seriously, and that's really what's going on here, right, is you have these guys who are really nothing but deputy sheriffs dressed up like they're the Navy SEAL Team 6 or the Delta Force or something, and they're essentially play-acting. And, you know, you equip them all with MP5s and with all the, you know, paramilitary armor and fatigues and whatever, the black parachute pants and all of this stuff. Well, they're looking for a fight. It's amazing. In fact, when you talk about in your first article here, the statistics of how many SWAT raids that these guys do a year, I think you said it was 8,000 over 4 years. I mean, where do they find the time? And where do they find the victims to launch 2,000 SWAT raids in a year? You know, and maybe that was for the whole state of Virginia, but still, I mean, or Maryland, I mean, that's still completely bananas. And it's amazing, actually, that they don't kill a lot more people than they actually do.
I agree. And it was so embarrassing for the state of Maryland that Maryland stopped counting. That was their solution. They didn't change the law to make SWAT teams less dangerous. Instead, they just changed the law so that people did not find out how many SWAT raids occurred. And this is typical of how state politicians deal with law enforcement abuses. This is the broader problem here because it goes to the heart of the governed power that can quickly become tyranny. And in a case like Duncan Lemp's killing, you got an innocent man laying in bed who gets shot, fatally shot by the police with no warning. It's like, if something like this happened to a government official, then, oh, my God, it'd be terrorism. And, you know, we've got to have all these the flags at half mast. And, you know, we've got to have new laws to protect the government officials. But it happens to a private citizen. That's like, eh. Yeah, is the ACLU might do something on this case. They've basically done almost nothing on it. Local media has basically ignored it. I've been kind of surprised by that. But maybe that will change. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's the right wing, especially, that they've got to count on. All these guys waving their thin blue line flags and all of this stuff. And it's just like with the war. If you lose the Republican Party, conservative rank and file, Tea Party voters out there, who do you got left to support this stuff? And so, like you were saying, they kill black people in Baltimore all day long and they get away with that. But they start turning against the support your local police faction, then they're going to find that they don't have really any support at all. And the support your local police faction are actually more well-armed than they are when it comes down to it.
Well, and it's an interesting thing that the here in Maryland, Maryland's one of the most anti-gun states, and Montgomery County is probably the most anti-gun county in the entire state. But there are folks who are kind of raising eyebrows about this, because it's like, okay, so there was a SWAT raid that apparently started out shooting pre-dawn based on an anonymous tip that someone owned firearms. And it's like, you know, there's a lot of people in this county who own firearms. So probably at least 50,000 or 100,000. So
yep.
Most of them aren't going to be out marching in the street. Most of them are not going to be waving flags, but there's a lot of quiet firearms owners here. So
yep.
They haven't been banned by the government yet. They, you know, the government might, some of the local politicians would probably like to do that. But, and this is interesting too, because this is a very liberal county, and I'm not aware that any of the county council members have said a damn thing about this case. They have not paid any attention to it. You know, they're busy doing other photo ops, or, you know, they're busy, you know, doing, I try to be polite. It's a struggle. But no, it's just, you know, it hasn't registered on the local radar screen. Yeah. It's like this guy, you know, his life didn't matter.
Well, and you know what's going to happen here too is, and just look at, because of the social distancing restrictions or whatever, how quick people are to pick up the phone and rat on their neighbors for taking a walk or whatever it is that they're allegedly not supposed to be doing. And this is the perfect thing for those who want to get other people in trouble. Tell the cops they have a gun they're not allowed to have and get them raided. And, you know, like, there's this swatting where you call and you say, oh, I just killed my wife and I'm about to kill myself. Send the SWAT team immediately. And then, you know, like a prank call kind of a thing. But what about just actually snitching on people and calling the cops going, oh, this guy's got a gun. This guy's got a gun. People will do that. I mean, some percentage of people would be perfectly happy to call 911 on each other over anything. And if having a gun is the kind of thing that'll really get you in trouble, then they'll call over that. So people have a real reason to be concerned about this. Just an anonymous tip can get you swatted at 4 a.m., huh?
Yeah, well, it was, according to the police, it was an anonymous tip. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know if that's accurate. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. But that was what apparently launched the investigation. And I think that they had... I think that the affidavit will at least show that the police claim to have other sources of information before launching a pre-dawn attack, a violent attack on a peaceful household. So, it's appalling. The cops have not been compelled to answer more questions so far. I mean, there was a case in New York, I think Newburgh, New York, something like that. Last month, there was the police shot a guy. And it was disputed what happened. There were riots. And within 24 hours, the cops had, you know, made public part of the camcom from the shooting, which showed that the guy had pulled a gun on the cops. Mm-hmm. Down in Houston, you had that horrendous raid early last year where the cops came in and killed two people in their 50s mm-hmm. on bogus charges. You know, it was only 2 weeks later that the police chief came out and said, look, we did wrong. I mean, this is a horrendous abuse. You know, there were false charges. The entire case smelled to high heaven. So here we are in Montgomery County, 6 going on 7 weeks. Government hasn't said crap on this.
You know, I'm pretty sure, I'm not sure where this statistic originally comes from, but Radley Balco has reported that there are 50,000 SWAT raids a year in this country. 1,000 a week.
Yeah, and I think that's from Peter Kraska, a professor at Eastern Kentucky University. He's done some great work. And Radley Balco has done great work on this issue for 20 years. A lot of respect for him. Something which I want to mention, too, is a big thanks to all the people who have either shared or posted or tweeted on my earlier articles on the Duncan Lemp killing. That's really helped make it visible. And this is a case people need to hear about, because This is what government has become. You know, government can carry out one of these raids before dawn, shoot and kill someone and then not answer any questions. I mean, you know.
Yep. And like you say,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, they're claiming that, oh, yeah, you know, the germs got us down. We'll have to get back to you and that kind of thing. So it takes journalists like yourself and your readers to keep the heat on and make sure that they can't just slink away on this.
Yeah, the readers and also you, this is the second time you've had me on to talk about this case. I appreciate that. And everybody knows that Scott Horton listeners are among the most savvy people out there.
Yeah, you hear that, all you savvy folks. So get your act together. Do something. Help to make this thing more of an issue than it already is and prevent them from getting away with this. You know? Something can be done. It's a matter of public pressure. It's just a matter of, are they going to be allowed to skate or are they not? And that's up to the people, not just of Maryland, but of the U.S. to make sure.
Yeah.
You know what? Just as there's an example going around where this woman claims that she was sexually assaulted by Joe Biden back in 1993. And the memo went out, apparently, that we're going to not cover this. And TV news and the major papers refused to even say her name or do a thing with it for weeks and weeks and weeks. And then even when you read the New York Times and the Washington Post stories on it, when they finally did cover it, you can see how badly they're trying to play it down. And yet it's not going away. And the reason it's not going away is because the activists who care decided that they're not going to let it. And it's as simple as that. And they're going to keep the heat up. And if it wasn't for them, it would already be over. And yet it's still in over, and it's not going to be allowed to die because they're going to keep fighting about it. So that's just a great example of the difference that can be made with a good article like this and some, you know, important retweets and conversations being started by people about this and spreading the word about it. And it is, you know, we both made mention reference earlier in the talk here about Ruby Ridge and Waco. And there are a lot of similarities, but then again, 50,000 of these things a year. What's really notable about Ruby Ridge and Waco was they were right wingers, or at least perceived to be right wingers, and their case of police abuse was championed by right wingers, who most of the time are on their knees licking cops' boots all day. And so I think that that's really important, that people get up off of their knees and stop licking those boots and start to realize that, hey, these other people who are complaining about police abuse, maybe they have a point. You know, if we're protesting about what's happened to Duncan Limp, then what about the Black Lives Matter guys? And what about the, what's his name? The football player taking a knee during the anthem and all that. Maybe the cops have been getting away with murder. Maybe there's a problem that affects all of us here. Instead of just, you know, this side versus that side, maybe it's the state versus the civilians of all colors and all political leanings, you know?
Yep. It's interesting on this Limp case. It's great how gun rights activists around the country are mentioning his name, invoking his name. You know, there's a lot of JPEGs, memes out there. I am Duncan Limp. Duncan Limp cannot be forgotten, stuff like that. One other thing that might be a problem in this case is that Maryland government's, and once again, going back to the build-in cover-up, Baltimore's had so many police killings and so many police abuses, and Baltimore was famous for paying out a lot of money, basically hush money, because people that was who would be beaten or even worse, or have their relatives killed by the police, would get a settlement from the government, but it would be conditioned on them not talking to the media about the case. And I don't know what the protocol is in Montgomery County. I hope, you know, I'm guessing the family will have some type of a wrongful death lawsuit. It certainly seems justified against the police and the county. But I hope that there isn't a muzzle that drops in on this, because this is part of the reason why the police brutality and killing has got so out of control in Baltimore, is because the government paid off so many people, but they were kept silent. So people didn't realize how widespread the cop abuses had become. Yep. And I don't know if that's par for all Maryland counties, but that's a concern in this case.
Well, so I think we may have talked about this last time, but I'm going to go ahead and bring it up again because I think it's just so insightful. It's this great lawyer, Scott Greenfield. People might know him from Twitter. And he wrote this article called Tamir Rice's Basically Reasonable Murder. And people might remember Tamir Rice was the 12-year-old boy with a toy gun at the park. And somebody called the cops on him and even told the 911 dispatcher, well, I'm pretty sure it's just a toy anyway. But he went ahead and called the cops. And so the cops came and they killed the kid. The cop jumped out of the passenger side and didn't even wait 2 seconds before he just blew the kid away. And so Scott Greenfield wrote this article explaining that, you know, how the law is that you're not allowed to shoot me unless you can prove that you absolutely had no other choice. You had to, you know, it was immediate and proportional to defend your own life or to defend another innocent person, something very close to that. In all 50 states, that's the law. But for a cop, there is no law that says it's a crime for them to shoot you. Once they're a cop, all those laws are completely suspended in their case. Now the only question is, was it reasonable? As in the term reasonable search and seizure of life, liberty, or property in the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. That's it. And so then what's reasonable, of course, is only to be decided by other cops' professional opinions, which means that any cop in America, all he has to do is say, furtive, waistband, and they get away with it. Because everybody, every cop, every professionally trained cop knows that if someone is furtive and moves their hand toward their waistband, that then that's the same as, you know, threatening to kill you or close enough for government work. Now it's reasonable to take your life. And that was what the experts said about Tamir Rice. He may have been a 12-year-old boy with a toy gun, and they may not have even given him a chance to drop the gun before they killed him. But that's just tough because they're government employees. They can do what they want. And this is, for all you conservatives out there, this is what they call judicial activism. The judges just made this up on the Supreme Court. There is no state legislature that ever passed a law that said that there's qualified immunity in this case. It was the judges that refined it down and down and down to where essentially even just a local sheriff's department deputy badge is a license to kill in the United States of America. And, you know, go read that article. It'll blow your mind because it goes through case after case of how they refine this down to the point where it's essentially impossible. The only time a cop gets in trouble for killing somebody is if he beats his own wife to death on a Saturday night off the clock, which they do from time to time. But otherwise, they can pretty much get away with just about any crime.
Well, it's true that the laws and the court decisions have been horrendously biased. The Supreme Court decisions on qualified immunity going back to the early 1980s have been a travesty. And they've, you know, it is pretty close to a license to not just kill, but to rob people and, you know, bomb their houses and stuff like that. There have been some cases where police have been held liable. The Houston case is an example of the raid that was completely based on lies. But if you look at the rate of successful prosecutions for police killings, I think it's probably less than 2%. And that doesn't mean that every time that a cop shoots someone is it means that the cop's a killer or a murderer. There are lots of cases where cops shoot someone who's robbing a bank or who's doing a violent crime, you know, ongoing. So those are completely different cases. There was a case here in Montgomery County last year, actually close to where I used to live on Randolph Road. There was a gun store, and there were four or five guys, I guess, from D.C. or from Annapolis who decided to break into the gun store late at night. And the gun store had, you know, video, and the police got alarmed. And the you know, the people kept robbing the gun store, even though when they figured the cops were on the way, a cop got in the scene. And the folks were fleeing in their car. The cops shot at them, killed one of the gun store robbers, and the others were later arrested. And I've not heard anybody make any criticism of the cop who did that shooting because, yeah, okay, someone got killed, but it sounded like a clean shot.
Yeah, well, I mean, the law is supposed to be that they've got to have demonstrated an immediate threat to somebody else. Certainly that would be the case if you had shot them. So just because someone's getting away with some guns doesn't mean they're on their way to kill somebody else with them, you know?
Yeah, there were some other circumstances, but I don't recall hearing any criticism by, you know, civil liberties groups or other groups.
Yeah. Well, maybe should have
shooting in that case.
I mean, if they were pointing guns out the window or something, I don't know. But anyway, I mean, the point is that it doesn't matter either way, because the cop would get away with it either way. If they had just been robbing a cupcake store and he wasted them, then there probably wouldn't have been much criticism of that either.
Well, you know? Okay. I mean,
it's certainly not by the district attorney's office and the grand jury.
Yeah, well, you know, Scott, that's part of the reason I've always avoided cupcake stores.
I can't believe that they even have those things. I mean, I guess it's, you know, at the height of the bubble.
Oh, my God.
I never see him again.
You know, folks with more money than sense. It's like you spend $4 for a, you know, cupcake with icing that's 2 inches thick on the top. It's like, eh. You know, for the same price, you could get two or three beers.
Yeah, seriously. And how do you convince somebody to invest their money in something like that? That's definitely height of the bubble only kind of business there.
Yep.
Anyway.
It was a, certainly around here, it was a mania.
Yeah.
But it's unfortunate because there were lots of good old-fashioned bakeries, and they're almost all gone. So instead, we've got these kind of... I guess not yuppified, but, you know, cupcake places that, I don't know, don't appeal.
Very yuppified, and they won't exist anymore. Now they're all.
That's true. That's true. The death rate's going to be real high for them.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, we're off on a terrible tangent. Probably a good time to stop. The great Jim Bovard, everybody, reporting on the killing of Duncan Lemp by the Montgomery County, Maryland SWAT team there last month. Thanks again, Jim.
Hey, Scott, thanks so much for having me on.
The Scott Horton Show, Anti-War Radio, can be heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, APSradio.com, antiwar.com, scotthorton.org, and libertarianinstitute.org.